We are going to be joined by an icon of professional wrestling here, somebody who has branded herself when she wrote her book, The First Lady of Professional Wrestling, and I think that any fair-minded person would have to admit that that is the case. If you were somebody like me that was a teenager in the 80s buying your three Apter mags per month, you know, a lot of times you bought it to keep up on the wrestlers and the storylines and the going-ons in the territory. But guess what? A little bit of scenery is nice from time to time as well. And I would dare say nobody brightened it up back in the day. Nobody like the one and only Missy Hyatt, who we are now happy to welcome for the first time to the FDH Lounge. Missy, it's a pleasure to have you in tonight. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. And I do have to tell you, though, but Gary Michael Capetta, the ring announcer for WCW, she gave me the name First Lady like 150 years ago.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of scarfed that from.
Oh, yeah. That definitely predates your book. No question about that. Yeah. I heard that being applied to you years ago because
I liked Mark Lorenz's, and so did Paul Lee. He used to always like the Walking Riot better.
That was a good one there, too. You know, you talked about that in your book. It's a thing that for anybody that hasn't read the book, they wouldn't know this, how it came to pass. You got the name Missy Hyatt, which is, of course, very close to your real name, in World Class. Going in there, you weren't quite sure what your identity was going to be, how it was going to go about. It all seemed to kind of get, at least the start of it, to get fleshed out with that meeting with Fritz Von Erich.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, Fritz was just like, why don't you just use your name? I mean, everyone called me Melissa, but my Johnny Tatum at the time, who's my boyfriend, my parents called me Missy. And so he was like, you know, Johnny was like, something Missy, and then Fritz was like, I like that, just use that.
And
so it was really cool, though, because I'm friends with Lacey Von Erich, Carrie's daughter.
Oh, okay.
And it was great to be able to tell her some stories about her dad that she didn't know.
Oh, that must have been
cool. And just tell her how great, like, because if it wasn't for her dad, you know, and her grandfather and her uncle, I would have never really, you know, I would have never got to do something and got to be in the business that I love. And it was just kind of cool to tell her, you know, and I think she liked hearing stories, and I like telling her, you know, that. I had very great memories from World Class.
Oh, that had to be really, really cool, you know, because, again, she was such a little girl at the time, and it's such a terrible tragedy what happened to Carrie. I'm sure that, you know, that clearly meant a lot to you. That had to mean a lot to her also, to kind of get some of these blanks filled in about what her dad was like personally and professionally. That must have been so cool.
Yeah, I mean, because it was great to be able to tell her how much, like, she would tell me stories. Like, I was telling her, I go, I just loved your dad. He could walk in down at an airport, and if nobody knew who he was, they would think he was either a rock star or an actor. I mean, he was a superstar. He had that aura about him. I mean, and there's only a few guys. There's like your Ric Flair. I mean, there's just a certain guys that have that aura of superstar that even if you don't watch wrestling, you know they're a superstar.
Yeah. Oh, he just gave it off. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, definitely.
You know, and I've seen both the documentaries on World Class, the official and the unofficial ones, and you know, that's just what everybody says. Everybody in that family had their role to play, and you know, Dave was like the great hand of the bunch here. You know, Kevin we exemplified the high flying and the wildness and stuff, but yeah, Kerry just had the aura, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He was the man.
You know, just, you know, what an incredible thing that really was with him here. And again, you know, you talked about World Class. That's where it all started for you, of course. So, you know, some time in the UWF after that, a cup of coffee in the WWF, into WCW. For somebody that, again, was first and foremost a fan of the business before you ever got in it, do you feel that you were, like, really fortunate looking back? Now, I mean, the territories are extinct and have been for some time to come, but you got to live that. You were in there at the tail end of it.
You know, I think I always joke that I was like, you know, 5-10 years too late to really get to enjoy the territories, because back then, you know, you got to, you know, people that came before me, they got to, you know, work in wrestling, you know, 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then they got to have jobs, you know, after the wrestling, you know, working in the office and stuff. But you could live someplace for a few years and make a living, a great living, and be home almost every night, and you didn't travel crazy traveling. I mean, some places you did. But it was a great, great life. I mean, and it's still the shows that I get to do now and what little, you know, stuff that I get to do now is really wonderful. I mean, I really was blessed to get the time that I did in it, you know, with the territories and the things like that. I was really, really blessed.
Well, you know, it's really weird because from reading your book and looking at the timing of it, and I've also read a couple of the books from Ted DiBiase, it's really weird because it's certainly within the same year, you and he ended up in New York there. And to me, that just sort of exemplifies the whole thing with Vince McMahon. Sometimes he hits a home run with guys. Sometimes he's able to peg something to them that is so well suited for them, and sometimes it's just a complete bust. As you pointed out in the book there, everything about the Missy Hyatt character that you had built really to that point was really sort of ill-suited to this kind of background role that you almost were going to have doing this Missy's Manor thing.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, too, is like I never interviewed people. You know, when I got up there, I had never had the microphone in my hand to interview people. I had never done that. And you know, considering I'd only been in wrestling a couple years, and I was really intimidated, and I was extremely scared. And if anybody sees my Missy's Manners, they're on my website. They're really pretty bad. My southern accent was really bad. I mean, and I'm going out there in front of these sold-out arenas that I had really only had seen a few of those in my lifetime. And it was really intimidating for a 22-year-old, late, you know, woman, and it was just really scary. I mean, it was kind of scary, too. And plus, you have the boss, Vince. He's telling you what to do. So if you suck, which I did, you know, there's no, you can't, you know, there's no one else. I mean, Jimmy Hart tried to help me out, and a few of the guys, you know, but it's, you know, I wasn't that good. So, I mean, it was like, where do you go, you know?
You know, and you know, it's another thing here, too, as you mentioned, the age on that, 22 at the time, is something that, again, for those of us that were reading the After mags back in the day, that were teenagers reading this stuff, didn't really realize, because the way that you were portrayed, you know, your character, you know, was this, you know, sort of, you know, worldly type person who loved, you know, the possessions and all that. You were only a couple of years older than a lot of us reading them. Do you ever get people coming up to you and saying, I didn't realize how close in age you were?
No, but I get them coming up to me and saying, oh, my God, I used to watch you when I was a little kid. And I'm like, oh, well, how old are you? And they're like, oh, I'm 32. And I'm like, ah. Yeah, we're 35. And I'm like, oh, thanks. Make me feel really old when they say that. But
you probably like it better when it's the other way around.
I always looked a little bit older than what I was, especially back then.
Yeah, you probably like it better when it's the other way around. I didn't realize how close in age you were to me, as opposed to I was 3.
That's okay. It
yeah,
doesn't
as
matter.
Opposed to
doesn't
I was 3
now.
Years old. Yeah.
It's so funny. When I was younger, you used to lie to be older,
uh-huh.
And then you get older, and then you lie to be younger. So.
Yeah, that's always the way that the cycle goes here. But, you know, I'm just curious, too, because, again, with your experience in the business, your time as an observer, I keep coming back to this. You were first and foremost a fan before you got involved in it here. You know, you're somebody that has
I think you have to be.
Yeah.
Anybody to want to be in wrestling, because it is a form of sports entertainment, and it is entertainment. If you're not a fan and it's not something that you love and you don't get bitten by the wrestling bug and you really, really love it, you just, I don't think you're going to have the love for it and you're going to want to do it. Everybody that I talk to, and most of the people that have been in the, you know, that have really stayed in the business and been in the business and really worked and prided themselves on making their craft good and wanting to be as good as they can, because they love it.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, your Cactus Jack, he loves it. The Funks, they love it. I mean, it's not, you know, we do it because we love it.
Oh, sure. You know, and you talk about in the book here, too, about the very meticulous notes that were kept – by Eddie Gilbert as far as how he envisioned things unfolding. You know, and again, I would guess that you've had your own thoughts over time here, too, as an observer. One of the things that's always fascinating for me to look at, I always love, in any form of life, you know, what-if scenarios here. There are definitely some people in this industry that were underutilized. I think Eddie's probably a good example as a guy who was never a main eventer in the big time because of his size. But, God, he had so many different tools there. I mean, he's one guy. I'm a big Arn Anderson mark. I think he's somebody that maybe could have been used in a bigger role potentially. Who are some guys that you looked at over time and thought, geez, you know, if the circumstances had been a little bit different, I think maybe this person
could have worked. Well, you know, see, I look at the situation of, like, maybe back when the UWF was bought by Jim Crockett, they could have done something like with Terry Taylor and Eddie, and then done the thing, had them two going up against maybe like Iron and Flair. We have said this before. And then, because I tell you what, one of the best matches was like the I Quit match with Tully Blanchard.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, just, there's just, back then to me, like, I that was like some of the best wrestling ever. Just to me, because it was like they still had the show, you know, they were getting into the whole music and the showmanship and stuff like that, you know, like the entertainment, but you still had great matches, and the matches weren't all this, you know, high spot, high spot, high spot. I mean, the matches still told a story and meant something,
yep.
And you didn't have to go and, like, you know, I don't know, nowadays to me, showing, like, I don't mind that they show, like, brutality towards women, or, like, you know, they want to slap a woman around or whatever like that, especially if she's a bad girl. But I don't like it that they use the threat of, like, sexual, like, rape or something on a woman to get
right.
heat, because to me that's just wrong in so many different levels. And back then they didn't have to do that.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, it's just, they've made it to the point that, what, do you have to come in there and burn a person's house down? And because if someone burned my house down and even hurt either one of my Jack Russells, I'm sorry, I'm not going to trade wrist locks with you in a wrestling ring. I'm going to go and get heavily armed, and we're going to send, you know, it's going to be a military action against a person.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, exactly. If you do that. I mean, and that's life in general. Someone, you know, wants to, if I was a man, someone broke in and tried to mess with my wife, I'm sorry, but we're calling for, you know, martial law.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that's why it's like, let's make it reality. You know, you got all this, you got guys and girls there. You can make, you know, love gone wrong. They do it on soap operas during the day,
yep.
all day long, and you don't have to take stuff to crazy extremes. And back then, you know, even like the I Quit match, now that was a crazy extreme.
Yep.
People were like, oh, my God, and but it was done in the ring. I mean, and let's go back to the ring. And I'm not a worker. I, you know, I've never even claimed to be a wrestler, even though I've had, you know, a few wrestling matches in my life. I wouldn't even call them wrestling matches. But, you know, I know what looks great, and I know what tells a story, and I know that, you know, wrestling is still on the marquee. And I think that, and I think that's why that Ultimate Fighting and things like that, people are really getting into that.
It definitely,
because when you got a 2-hour program and only 15 minutes of it is wrestling in 2 hours, people want to see more than skits.
They definitely do. And you know what? And you said something that kind of stood out to me there when you talked about the UWF acquisition as kind of a what if. What were your thoughts on this? I mean, everybody like me has kind of looked at it from the outside and said, man, did they miss the boat? They didn't even do a unification match with Steve
No,
Williams
I mean, they could have. I mean, it was the same thing when they did, like, WCW
yeah.
and WWF. If they would have never told anybody that they owned it,
yeah.
kept them two separate things, and kept the Monday Night Wars going, how conniving would that be?
Right.
Ha-ha, I'm making double the pay-per-view money.
Right.
And I got two companies, and everybody has jobs.
Yeah.
And you could make it, I mean, and I don't understand that they want brand marketing, but even if you're the WWE champion and you're the SmackDown champion, you're going to be on all these other shows anyway. Make people watch the other show to see that person.
Right.
Don't put the guys on all the different shows.
Right.
Make them special, you know, and it's like, I guess they forgot about, you know, making someone special, making people pay to see a pay-per-view or go and watch it live, but they give it for free. You know, and it's like back then, if they would have kept UWF, like, you know, they always came in and said, you know, Jim Crockett said, oh, we're going to keep them separate, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, right. But they could have done that. And like Terry Taylor and Eddie, they were a good tag team.
Yeah.
They would have been a great heel tag team. And then they could have, like, gotten their faction together to go against, like, the Four Horsemen.
Can you imagine the Four Horsemen as faces going up against the UWF Invaders? That would have just been
nuclear. My God. Yeah, that would have been way before the whole, you know, NWO or whatever. They could have been, that would have been awesome, and they could have kept them kind of separate.
Yep.
And then just, it would have been really cool like that. Because, you know, UWF, they didn't really, they could have gone around. Like when, you know, Ric Flair was like the NWA champion, he would come in to World Class, and he would be there for, you know, a few days or a week, and then he'd be in Florida, and he would go around, you know, to the big shows. And they could have kept something like that going and kept jobs for a lot of people. They didn't realize how many jobs got cut by doing that.
That's true. That's true. You know, when you talk about the names of the day, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this just in terms of what we did last week on the show. We talked with a guy who I think I could call probably a new friend of our show here, J.J. Dillon. Very nice guy to talk with.
Oh, I love him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, you got any good J.J. stories?
No, I was just, you know, as a matter of fact, I saw him in Pittsburgh at a charity show. And I was telling him how much I loved the thing he did with Baby Doll when he allegedly Tully had sent her to the Bahamas or somewhere. And it was really JJ did it. And I love that. I mean, that's like, you know, let me tell you something. People love dissension and sneakiness and stuff like that, like day soap operas. You don't have to, you know, do all this other, you know, crazy stuff, you know, that's too outlandish that nobody can believe. But people would believe that.
Right.
You know, that's something that's believable because it's, you know, what, you didn't send me that ticket?
Right.
She comes back all tan and stuff. You know, that's just, you know, dissension. I love all that. I miss all that. That was great storytelling.
Well, and in terms of how you look at stuff here, too, I've got a philosophical question for you as well, because I go back to last week's show, and it's a thing where it's sort of one end of the spectrum from something we did last week to this end of the spectrum, because I want to talk about your book, First Lady of Wrestling. We had last week on our show and talked to, we were fortunate to have on, the one and only Bob Barker, who was talking about his new book, and he wrote memoirs, and his are very old school Hollywood. He really, you know, didn't rock the boat on anything. They just, you know, I want to take the high road on this, whatever. And I say that not to make fun of him. I respect, you know, that's the approach.
You know what? What's so great about him is when he talks about all the time, get your pet spayed and neutered.
Yep.
And I volunteer for Russell Rescue and Animal Care and Control, and it's like I hate seeing the things on TV about, oh, they used to do all the send money to all the kids that are starving. Now they want to pull your strings, send money to these dogs. You know, the only way people can really help is to go to their own Animal Care and Control or their own Humane Society that's their local one and either give money there or donate your time or adopt a dog.
Oh, that's true.
Or a cat.
That's true, and that's something that you very much would agree with him on. But it's very interesting to me, talking about him with his book and your book, which I had previously read and then reread one, you know, some parts of it just to refresh my memory when I heard you were going to be coming on here. It's clearly one end of the philosophical spectrum to the other. Yours, what you were determined that yours was going to be the good, the bad, and the ugly, personal life and also professional life in the business. So talk about your decision making, your thoughts on how you were going to formulate this book, First Lady of Wrestling.
Well, you know what it was? Is I was just going to tell my stories, and I had two great writers that helped me, and they're the ones that really put everything together in like the form that it was in the chapter form and everything. But all it was me telling my stories, and you know, and my personal life is entwined into my wrestling life because that's just, you know, that's the way it is. I mean, being in wrestling, it's like you travel a long way. It used to be in the car or whatever, and it's like, you know, you might be in the car 3-5 hours and then sit around a dressing room for a couple hours to go out there and work 20 minutes.
You know,
and then do it all again. So, you know, your life, you know, kind of goes into it, too. So, but, it was my story, my life, and for people that I didn't put in it or I didn't get stories correct, it was my life the way I remember it, and damn it, that's how I'm sticking. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I want to ask you, too. I'll throw this out here. I'm not going to elaborate on this question. We'll make it a teaser for folks to buy the book here, but your story about Jim Kelly, Could we have predicted how the man was going to play in Super Bowls based on your experience with
him?
Yeah,
and, you know, if I would have known that at the time in Atlanta, I should have bet, you know. I should have bet against him.
Yeah.
I was such a fool. Now, you know what? The best thing to plug is better because my book's been out now, like, almost 10 years.
Yes. You got your website also.
But, you know what? My website is the best thing.
Oh, sure, yeah. Talk about that. We always give our guests a chance to plug stuff here. We've got it linked, actually, on our site here tonight.
Okay.
You're Missy, I believe it's MissyHyatt.net. Is that the...
I have MissyHyatt.net and then MissyHyatt247.com.
Okay, yeah. Talk about some of the things you've got on there. I noticed, and as an ECW fan, I noticed with some particular appreciation, Francine, one of the ones
who participates. Francine was involved. On the MissyHyatt.net, I have, like, all my friends, different girls from wrestling, Malaya Hosaka, Daphne, but I think then she was the governor or something. I don't know what the different names. But I have and Tammy and Rain, a few of the girls, and, you know, mine and friends. And I also do, it's like we put up like 2 or 3 episodes a week. It's like a reality kind of uncut and uncensored videos of like my life and like really crazy things. I do a whole thing like Boob Busters, and people will email me different things that they want to see, and I'll review wrestlers' books, any of their nude videos or any kind of videos, shoot tapes, and I kind of review them and watch them and have fun. It's all fun and games, and it's none of it's taken any seriously. And then my Missy Hyatt 24/7, I have cams in my house, so and I do chats with people. We watch wrestling together.
Well,
but the ones in my house, and then everybody just kind of follows me around. But it's just making fun of my own self.
Well, people have seen examples of that. I think your time that you spent on the Heyman Hustle is one of the better episodes of that I think I've ever seen. That is the Missy Hyatt character in all its glory.
You know what's so funny? It's like we laughed about that. Paul and I laughed. He's like, he goes, I forget who he wanted to do that, but then he called me up. It was like a last-minute thing. He goes, just come and just, I just want you to talk the whole time. I'm like, what about? He goes, anything. And so I think it was like a 3 minutes or something or 2.5 minutes that all I did was talk. But I had to do it a lot longer because that was, you know, they cut it and everything. Unlike my show, it's uncut, but, you know, it was, they cut it up, but, and had to do, you know, do stuff, just do it again. He said, he's like, just talk. And I didn't even say anything about wrestling.
Right.
I don't even know what I was saying. That's because, you know, he's like, I just want you to talk. And I was like, okay, I will take my ADHD medicine that morning. So that's me, not medicated.
Well,
but, you know, usually most of the time I am medicated, so I'm not so, like, all over the place.
That was very entertaining. We got an email from a listener here, Jake in Stone Mountain, Georgia. He says, and I got a feeling
my dog's name is Jake.
Really? Okay.
I have it. Well, I didn't name him that. Everybody thinks I named him after Jake the Snake, but I didn't. Both of my dogs are fosters, but he came to live with me, and his name was already Jake.
Oh, all right. So it's just a coincidence then. Well,
that's my favorite. One of my favorite names, Jake and Milo, my favorite names.
Oh, all right. Well, this Jake wants to know, what was the funniest rib anyone ever pulled on you in the locker room, and did you ever retaliate?
Oh, my God. Okay, well, the funniest rib ever that happened to me was it was Abdul the Butcher during the Cactus Jack Mankind's match against I forget the other guy, big blonde haired guy.
Van Hammer?
Like guitar player or something.
Van Hammer.
Anyway,
Van Hammer.
Van Hammer, they had a falls count anywhere in Wichita, Kansas. I'll never forget this because most people come up to me about this. And Abby comes out during, and I was doing the roving reporter, and I had no idea about this. They picked me up and they threw me on live TV into a water trough. And it was
that.
A huge water trough. I found it later. I followed Dusty, and this is on my website. I followed Dusty asking him about that. And I followed him into the men's bathroom. This is like a year ago or so at some convention. And he was like, talking about, they were going to throw me into they were having the fair, and there was a bull. And they were going to throw me in the bull's pen, but the guys, they were like, well, we don't know. It might go after her. So they were like, well, we better not do that because she might get, like, poked to death, or, you know, horned to death, I don't know, whatever you call that, how the bulls trample you to death. So then they did a real trough with water and actually threw me, and I had no idea about it.
Well, yeah, Time Warner.
And I did retaliate because I sent them a bill for my shoes and my outfit.
Yeah, making them pay that would be, cruel and unusual, probably. But
yeah, exactly.
Well, the beauty of it is that there's with the stuff that's on your site, I think there's a lot of things that people can find on YouTube that would probably want to entice them to go to your site, that would make them curious about you if they were somebody that weren't really following wrestling back in the day. That's the beauty of YouTube. You can find a ton of stuff.
I know. YouTube's great.
You
can find out all the stuff, like Infowars.com about real, real journalism out there.
Mm-hmm.
And all kinds of stuff. I love YouTube.
There is. We've got a video embedded on our FDHLounge.com site tonight of, this is old school here, as we called it, Raven before he was Raven. The thing you did with Scotty Levy.
When he was who? Scotty the Body?
Scotty the Body,
Flamingo,
yeah. We've got a clip up with the thing with you, Scotty, and Jerry Lawler. That's some good stuff right there.
Oh, yes, when I told him I was going to go on a date with him.
Yes.
I love that. You know what I miss is we did Made for the Day with Jerry Lawler, and we had a long version. It was like 12 minutes. Me and him, I did it at his house, and it was a really long version. They cut it down a lot shorter for the show, but I had a long version. I lost it, like at some convention. They played it at some convention, and someone took the tape and got it from me. But it's probably the only one out there because they probably, burned them after we used them. But it was the funniest stuff working with Jerry Lawler and work in Memphis. That was some of the best times ever, doing live TV. People don't realize, that was, you get so excited, like Saturday morning, you're like jacked because you're getting to do live TV.
That was great stuff. That was the glory days, and, you got to participate in that. I just like to bring it all the way around here, full circle, and say, again, and you talked about in your book, and again, the book did come out some years ago, but wondering, if anything might ever happen with WWE. You had something like this year, WrestleMania 25. I'll say you would have been perfect for that Battle Royal that they did there.
I need to apologize to the few people. This is a shout-out to the few people that I called. I thought they were going to. They needed 25 girls that were like ex-divas, not the 25 that were there. And I was like so depressed thinking, but there's not even 25 ex-girls to call. what I'm thinking, but there was 25 girls and it's counting all the girls that they have. So I called a few of my friends and I'm like, I don't know why. I was all like, they must really not like me for some reason. I was like, made me very sad.
But
then I found out they only had three girls that weren't under contract. So then I was like, oh, okay.
I was going to say it was past and present. I would think again, I'll just say from our point of view here on this show, we'd love to see something like that. For any of the times that they're going to do anything where there's a nostalgic shout-out, it would be great if they would do that. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
it would be great, too, because they have me all over there 24/7.
Yep.
And they show me all the time over there. And, thank God there's nice people like Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross and stuff that do bring up my name and stuff every once in a while, which is really cool because, it makes, people will come up to me, we saw you on 24/7, so at least I'm alive in the reruns.
Oh,
so that's kind of cool.
I didn't even really think about it, but that's great. I mean, you're sort of living on to a whole new generation of people, I guess.
Because I've had young kids, like the kids that work at the grocery store and the pharmacy down by me. They get 24/7, and they're just like, "Oh my God, we saw you get caned by the Sandman," or they'll tell me, "We saw a batter bowl. Wow, you used to have really big hair," and things like that. So it's kind of cool.
Well, and that's the thing here too. You've had such a career here that we can only really scrape the surface of it here. Anytime we get a chance to talk to you, but it's been a pleasure to have you on, Missy. I want to give you another shot here. MissyHyatt.net, the stuff you got there. Please take an opportunity, plug away everything that you want the people to know about.
Me now?
Yeah, sure.
Oh no, just check out MissyHyatt.net or MissyHyatt247.com because there's if you want to find out anymore and see new video, old video, and crazy video, and everything else.
Well,
I'm at that. You know what? I'm sorry because DJ, my web girl, she gave me this thing. I got to make sure I got to put everything down here and just.
All right.
Yes, we have over 11,000 photos on MissyHyatt.net.
Okay.
We also have April Hunter Beulah McGillicuddy, Lady Alexander. There's a lot more. We have even Christy Mist from XPW, Malaya Hisaka. I'm looking all over here. I got to make sure I say this. And we have the weekly live webcams. And we do, oh, yeah, we do, like, weekly updates, like four sets of photos and at least one video. We usually, like, do two or three because I send her all the tapes. And since we don't make them, since they're uncut and we don't edit, so it's really reality. So when I screw up, I screw up.
Yeah.
We just keep going. It makes it for a whole lot. Makes it a lot better when you do that.
Hey, I think I just had a moment like that that I'd like to have back. I'm holding up your book to the camera here, and being a gentleman and how I'm holding the front cover here. I noticed on it here, I probably am a real heel for not peeling off the only 498 sticker off the front here.
Oh, that my was... God. Yeah, I know.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, believing me, that's what I'm saying. You can plug it all you want, but you know what? I already got paid for it.
Sure,
so it really doesn't matter.
All right.
No, I mean, I really, ECW Press, the people that published it,
yeah,
were really, really awesome.
Yeah.
They're really great. So, but you know what's so funny? I don't even know. I didn't get to pick out any of the pictures in the book. I don't even know the name of the guy on the front cover.
Oh, really?
Yeah, isn't that funny?
I mean, it just we just assumed that was probably the guy you were dating when the book was out. You don't know
No.
That guy? That's hilarious.
He was there for that was for the ECW photo shoot, and that was going to be Miss January, and it was for, like, you know, like the party, like with the tuxedo shirt and champagne, and he was just a guy that Lady Alexander and her husband, that they were training him or something, and I was like, oh, you want to be in a picture?
Oh, that's hilarious.
I know. It's so funny to this day because so many people ask, who's the guy on the front? I'm like, I don't know.
Oh, that's, you know what? I'm glad we got you a chance to give you to tell you that story because that is pretty funny. That's a nice little addition to it there. But again, you've always got so much going on with the site and everything like that. Missy, as things continue to go forward with you here and you continue to have, you know, the projects going on with your websites, we'd love to have you back on sometime. It was a blast and the time just went so fast to have you on.
Well, good. Anytime you need me, you just, you know, give me a shout.
We'll
be happy to.
Oh, thanks. We'll be in touch, Missy. Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Missy Hyatt, everyone, the first lady of professional wrestling, and just a very fun and unique segment whenever you get a chance to talk to her. Somebody who lived a lot and did a lot in the roughly, I'd say, 15 years in a big time part of wrestling, and she's continued on the independent circuit.